A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been looking at industrial containers again. Specifically, what makes a plastic box robot friendly? He writes, "We've talked in many episodes about the Eurobox system. One of the features you'll see increasingly in industrial plastics and storage containers is their built-in RFID tagging and support with robotic picking systems. I'd love to talk today about robotic inventory management and the standard and certification procedure. In many episodes, we've honed in on one of the fundamental differences between consumer and industrial. Everything. The industrial product world is spec and standard led, whereas consumer everything tends to be image and brand led. So let's talk about the standards underpinning robotic support for all manner of containers used in supply chain, from the Euroboxes up to pallets, plastic pallets, IBCs, and Dolovs, and what those actually are. What kind of systems for automated picking and distribution already exist and are well established? What physically makes a difference between containers that are operable with these systems and those that can't be used with them? So today we're going to decode the invisible spec sheet that makes a container robot ready and explain what a Dolov actually is.
And I love this prompt because Daniel's nailed the framing. Consumer logistics is all about the unboxing experience. The sleek Amazon package, the branded tape, the tissue paper inside. Industrial logistics couldn't care less about any of that. A container's value is in its spec compliance, not its logo. If it meets the standard, it works. If it doesn't, it's landfill.
The spec sheet is the brand.
And the container hierarchy here runs from the small to the massive. You've got Euroboxes at the bottom. Those are the VDA 4500 standardized bins, the 600 by 400 millimeter footprint, the ones we covered in that origin story episode. Above those, you've got plastic pallets built to EUR or ISO pallet sizes. Then IBCs, intermediate bulk containers, typically 1,000 liters, with that metal cage around a plastic bottle. And at the top, the Dolovs, large, heavy-duty plastic pallet boxes for bulk storage and transport.
And that word Dolov, most people have never heard it, but they've almost certainly seen one. It's one of those terms that's everywhere in industry and invisible everywhere else.
Right. A Dolov is a rotationally molded polyethylene pallet box. The standard footprint is 1200 by 1000 millimeters. That's a EUR pallet footprint, so it slots right into the existing pallet infrastructure. Capacities run from about 400 liters up to over 1000. Integrated fork pockets, usually four-way entry, so a forklift or robot can grab it from any side, and often a lid. They're used for bulk storage of powders, granules, liquids in liner bags, heavy components. You see them in automotive supply chains, chemical plants, food processing. The name comes from the Israeli manufacturer Dolov, which is now part of Schuler Alibert, though in the UK the term sometimes gets used generically for any large pallet box.
Which is itself a fascinating thing, a brand name becoming a category name, like Hoover or Kleenex, but for a giant plastic tub.
And the generic term, if you're writing a spec sheet, is pallet box or bulk container. But in a lot of warehouses, people just say Dolov and everyone knows what they mean.
So let's start with the core thesis here. Robotic compatibility isn't an afterthought. It's engineered into the container's geometry, material, and RFID tagging from the start. You don't bolt on robot friendliness later.
No, you really don't. And this is where the spec-led versus image-led distinction bites hardest. A consumer storage bin from a home improvement store is designed to look good on a shelf, to have a certain color, maybe a nice ergonomic handle. Nobody buying is thinking about whether a Fanu depalletizer arm can grip it at speed. But in an industrial setting, that's the entire question. Can the robot find it? Can the robot lift it? Can the robot place it without dropping it or crushing it?
And if the answer to any of those is no, the container is useless regardless of how sturdy or well-priced it is.
So let's get into the physical details. What exactly makes a container robot ready? There are five big ones. First, a flat, rigid base with no warpage. Robotic grippers, whether they're suction cups, fork tines, or mechanical clamps, need a predictable plane to engage with. If the base has even a few millimeters of warp, the gripper might not seat properly, or the vision system might misjudge the pick point.
And warpage gets worse over time, right? A container that's been sitting in the sun or under heavy load for 6 months isn't the same shape it was when it left the mold.
And that's why load deflection testing is part of the certification process. The standard, ISO 8611 for pallets, specifies how much sag is acceptable under a given load. If a pallet or container deflects too much, the robot's fork tines can't slide in cleanly. They jam, or they scrape, or they miss entirely.
Second feature?
Define fork entry points with proper clearance. This sounds obvious, but a lot of generic containers have fork pockets that are slightly too narrow, or slightly too low, or positioned inconsistently. An automated guided vehicle or an autonomous mobile robot with fork attachments expects those pockets to be in a specific location with specific dimensions every single time. The tolerance is typically plus or minus a millimeter on critical dimensions under VDA 4500.
A millimeter. So we're not talking about close enough.
We're talking about the difference between a pick that works and a pick that fails. And in a high-speed automated warehouse, a failed pick cascades. The robot stops, the conveyor stops, a human has to intervene. And suddenly you've lost 5 minutes of throughput for a 1 millimeter error.
Third,
stacking lugs in corner geometry that align precisely for automated depalletizing. The VDA 4500 Euro box has these interlocking lugs on the top and bottom edges. When you stack one box on another, they click into place with about 5 millimeters of tolerance. That's tight enough that the stack is stable, but loose enough that a robot can separate them without excessive force. The corner geometry also matters. Sharp, well-defined corners give vision systems a reliable reference point. Rounded, soft corners don't.
So the robot is essentially using the corners as fiducial markers, like those black and white patterns you see on motion capture suits.
That's a great comparison. The vision system is looking for edges and planes, and if the edges are mushy, the system's confidence drops.
Fourth feature.
The RFID tag pocket location. Under VDA 4000, there's a recessed slot on the long side of the container, 100 millimeters from the bottom edge. That's where the tag goes. It's not arbitrary. The location is chosen so that when the container is sitting on a conveyor or a shelf, the tag is at a consistent height and angle relative to the reader antenna. That consistency is what lets the system read tags at speed, sometimes hundreds per minute, without missing reads.
And if you just stick an RFID tag somewhere random on the container?
You'll get inconsistent reads. The tag might be too close to metal racking, or at a bad angle, or blocked by another container. In a high-speed environment, that means missed inventory events. The system thinks the container never arrived or never left, and your inventory database drifts from reality.
Fifth feature.
Surface texture and material stiffness. This one's subtle but critical. If the container surface is too slick, like a highly polished polypropylene, suction grippers can't get a reliable seal. If it's too flexible, the container deforms when the gripper applies pressure, and the vision system's dimensional model no longer matches reality. The ideal surface has a slight texture, enough for suction cups to grip, and the material is stiff enough to hold its shape under load.
So you're designing the plastic formulation and the mold surface finish with the robot in mind, not just the human hand.
And that's the shift in thinking that separates industrial containers from consumer ones. A consumer bin is designed for a person to grab by the handles. An industrial container is designed for a machine to grab by the base, the corners, the fork pockets, and the human is almost an afterthought.
Let's talk about the RFID tagging system itself, because that's the other half of what Daniel asked about. What's actually in that little pocket?
It's a passive UHF RFID tag, typically using the EPC Gen 2 protocol, operating in the 860 to 960 MHz range. Passive means it has no battery. It harvests energy from the reader's radio signal to power up and transmit its data. The tag stores a unique identifier called an electronic product code, or EPC. That EPC links to a database record that tells you what's in the container, how much it weighs, where it came from, where it's going, when it was last inspected, the whole life cycle.
And because it's UHF, you get red ranges of several meters, not the few centimeters you get with HF or NFC tags.
Right. The certification testing requires a minimum read range of 3 meters at a 90-degree angle. That's what lets a forklift driving through a warehouse gate read every container on its load in a single pass, without stopping. Compare that to barcodes, where someone has to physically point a scanner at each label. It's a completely different order of operation.
And the tag is embedded during molding, not stuck on afterwards.
Ideally, yes. The tag goes into the mold before the plastic is injected or rotated, so it ends up fully encapsulated in the container wall. That protects it from impact, chemicals, moisture, and, crucially, from being scraped off by automated handling equipment. A stick-on tag on the outside of a container will survive maybe a few hundred cycles in a robotic system before it gets damaged or peeled off. An embedded tag lasts the life of the container, which can be 10 or 15 years.
So the tag is part of the container structure, not an accessory.
And that's the fundamental misconception Daniel was hinting at. People think RFID tagging is something you can add later, just buy a roll of stickers and you're done. But for robotic reading at industrial speed and reliability, the tag placement has to follow the standard, and it really needs to be embedded during manufacturing. The GS1 Global Traceability Standard governs both the tag data encoding and the physical placement. If you deviate from that, you're building a system that works in the lab and fails on the warehouse floor.
Okay, so we've covered the container side. Now let's talk about the robots themselves. What systems for automated picking and distribution are already well established?
There are four main categories. The first is automated storage and retrieval systems, ASRS. These are the crane-based systems that run up and down high bay racking, retrieving entire pallets or individual bins. They've been around for decades. The first ones were installed in the 1960s, but modern versions are faster, more precise, and fully integrated with warehouse management software. An ASRS crane knows exactly which container is in which rack location, and it can retrieve it in seconds.
These are the systems that let you run a lights-out warehouse. No humans on the floor at all.
The second category is autonomous mobile robots with fork attachments, AMRs. Companies like Geek Plus, Locus Robotics, and Miar make these. They're basically self-driving forklifts that navigate using LiDAR and cameras rather than following floor tape or magnetic strips. They can pick up pallets or dolavs from a staging area and deliver them to a picking station or a loading dock, all without a driver.
The third category?
Robotic depalletizers. These are articulated arms, think FANUC M410 or ABB IRB 6700, with suction or fork grippers that unstack containers from pallets. They use vision systems to identify each layer of containers, then pick them one by one and place them on a conveyor. The precision required here is extraordinary. The arm has to know exactly where each container edge is, and it has to apply just enough force to lift without crushing.
If the containers aren't perfectly stacked, or if the pallet is slightly warped, the depalletizer's error rate goes up.
Dramatically. There's a well-known case. I won't name the company, but the numbers are instructive, where a non-certified plastic pallet with a warped base caused a robotic depalletizer to fail on about 1 in 20 picks. That's 5% downtime, which in a high-throughput facility is catastrophic. They switched to ISO 8611 certified pallets and the failure rate dropped to roughly 1 in 5,000. That's the difference a spec makes.
1 in 20 versus 1 in 5,000. That's not incremental improvement. That's a completely different category of reliability.
It's worth pausing on that because it gets at something deeper. When people think about automation, they tend to think about the robots, the arms, the sensors, the software. But the robots are only as good as the things they're handling. A robot is a precision instrument, and if you feed it imprecise inputs, warped containers, inconsistent dimensions, tags in the wrong place, you get imprecise outputs. The container is part of the system, not just a passive object being moved around.
The fourth category.
Goods-to-person systems. These are the Amazon Robotics drive units, the little orange robots that slide under shelving pods and bring them to a human picker. The human stays at a station, the robots do all the traveling. This is a different paradigm from the other three. Here, the robot isn't picking individual containers, it's moving entire shelving units. but the containers on those shelves still need to be standardized and RFID tagged, because the system has to track what's on which shelf at all times.
Even in a goods-to-person system, the container standards still matter. They're just one level removed from the robot's gripper.
Right, and that brings us to the certification and testing procedure. How do you actually prove that a container meets the standard?
Daniel specifically asked about this, the certification procedure that underpins all of this.
The process varies by standard, but the broad strokes are consistent. For VDA 4100, you submit your container design to a certified testing lab. They run dimensional accuracy tests, measuring every critical dimension and checking that it's within plus or minus 1 millimeter of the spec. They run load deflection tests, stacking containers with a specified weight and measuring how much the base sags. They run RFID read range tests, placing the tagged container at various angles and distances, and verifying that the tag can be read reliably at a minimum of 3 meters.
Who does the certifying?
Several bodies. The VDA itself, that's the German Association of the Automotive Industry, certifies Euro boxes. FEM, the European Federation of Materials Handling, covers a broader range of handling equipment. GS1 handles the RFID compliance side. If your container passes all the tests, you get a certificate and the right to mark the container with the standard number, and that mark is what tells a warehouse operator that this container will work in their automated system.
The mark is a promise. This thing will behave the way you expect it to behave.
It's a promise backed by testing, not marketing. That's the spec-led world in a nutshell. Nobody cares what color the container is or whether the logo looks good. They care whether it deflects less than the maximum underload and whether the RFID tag reads at 3 meters.
Let's talk about BMW's Dingolfing plant, because that's the poster child for this working at scale.
Dingolfing is remarkable. It's one of BMW's largest production facilities, and they use VDA 4500 certified Euro boxes with embedded RFID tags for just-in-time parts delivery to the assembly lines. Here's how it works. A truck arrives with pallets of Euro boxes containing specific components, door handles, wiring harnesses, whatever. A robotic depalletizer unloads the pallets, reading each box's RFID tag as it goes. Autonomous mobile robots pick up the boxes and deliver them to the exact workstation on the assembly line where those parts are needed. When a box is empty, an AMR collects it, takes it to a stacking station, and the empty boxes are automatically stacked and returned to the supplier. The entire loop, full box in, empty box out, happens without a single human touching a container.
The system knows, in real time, exactly how many of each part are on the line, how many are in transit, and how many are still on the truck.
Because every read event updates the inventory database. The RFID tag is read when the box comes off the truck, when it's placed on the AMR, when it arrives at the workstation, when it's picked up empty, when it's stacked, and when it's loaded back onto the return truck. That's 6 or 7 read events per container per cycle, and with thousands of containers cycling through daily, you're talking about a fire hose of inventory data that's perfectly accurate, updated in real time, with no human data entry.
And the error rate?
Near zero. Not literally zero, nothing is literally zero, but when every container is certified, every tag is in the standard location, and every read point is calibrated, you're looking at missed read rates in the fractions of a percent. Compare that to a manual barcode scanning operation, where human error alone, someone forgets to scan, scans the wrong barcode, scans the same barcode twice, can push error rates into the low single digits.
The cost of the certified container pays for itself in error reduction alone.
In labor reduction, a lights-out warehouse running on ASRS and AMRs can operate with 40 to 60% fewer staff than a conventional warehouse. The people who remain are mostly doing supervision, maintenance, and exception handling, not walking around with barcode scanners.
But there's a barrier to entry here, and I want to make sure we address it. Certified containers cost more.
20 to 30% more than generic alternatives. That's real money when you're buying thousands of containers. For a smaller operator, a regional distributor, a mid-sized manufacturer, that premium can be hard to justify on paper, especially if they're not yet running a fully automated system.
There's a chicken and egg problem. You don't buy certified containers because you don't have robots, and you don't buy robots because your containers aren't certified.
That's where a lot of smaller operators get stuck. They buy generic containers to save money up front. Then, when they do automate, or when a customer like BMW requires them to use certified containers for inbound shipments, they have to replace their entire fleet. The retrofit cost is brutal.
Let's talk about the tension between standardization and innovation, because this is where it gets interesting. VDA 4000 was designed in the 1980s.
1982, I believe. It was built for manual handling and early automation, conveyor systems, basic palletizers. The stacking lugs, the dimensions, the RFID pocket location, all of that was optimized for the technology of the time. But modern robotic grippers are more sophisticated. They can handle more complex geometries. They can adapt to slight variations. So the question is, does a 40-year-old standard still make sense, or is it holding us back?
The answer seems to be yes to both.
The standard still works, and its installed base is enormous. Millions of VDA 4500 containers in circulation across Europe and beyond. But there are newer standards emerging that address the gaps. VDA 550, for example, is an interface standard for AGV and AMR communication. It defines how different brands of robots talk to a central control system, so you're not locked into one vendor's ecosystem. That's a genuinely new development, and it didn't exist when VDA 4500 was written.
Then there's smart containers. Containers with embedded sensors for temperature, shock, tilt, humidity. That's a whole new layer of data that goes beyond simple inventory tracking.
Right. A smart container doesn't just tell you where it is. It tells you whether the contents have been dropped, whether they've been exposed to temperatures outside the acceptable range, whether they've been tilted beyond a safe angle. For pharmaceuticals, perishable foods, sensitive electronics, that data is enormously valuable, but it requires new standards for sensor placement, data formats, and communication protocols. And those standards don't exist yet, or they exist in fragmented, vendor-specific forms.
We're in this awkward transitional period. The old standard is battle-tested and universally adopted, but showing its age. The new standards are more capable, but fragmented, and not yet universal.
The cost of switching is enormous. If you're BMW, with millions of euro boxes in circulation, you can't just announce that, as of next year, everyone needs to switch to a new smart container standard. The supply chain would collapse. So adoption happens at the edges. New facilities, new supplier relationships, new product lines, and the old standard persists alongside the new for years or decades.
Which brings us to the practical question. If someone listening is specifying containers for a new warehouse or an automation retrofit, what should they actually do?
Three things. First, prioritize VDA 4500 certification for small bins and ISO 8611 certification for pallets. It's the cheapest insurance against robotic incompatibility you can buy. The 20 to 30% premium on the container is nothing compared to the cost of 5% downtime on a robotic depalletizer.
Second,
RFID tagging isn't optional if you're planning any level of automated inventory management. But, and this is crucial, the tag placement must follow the standard. A VDA 4500 pocket 100 millimeters from the bottom edge on the long side. Generic stick-on tags in non-standard locations will fail in high-speed robotic environments. I've seen warehouses where they tried to save money by sticking tags on manually, and the read rates dropped to 80%. That means 1 in 5 containers isn't being tracked. At that point, you might as well not have RFID at all.
And third?
Match the container type to the automation system. Euroboxes for small parts going into ASRS bins or goods-to-person systems. Plastic pallets for unit loads being handled by AMR fork attachments. Dolavs for bulk storage being moved by depalletizers with fork grippers. Don't use a Dolav where a Eurobox would suffice. The robotic system's gripper design is optimized for specific container geometries, and if you feed it the wrong geometry, it'll fail in ways that are expensive and hard to diagnose.
Because the failure doesn't look like a robot error. It looks like a container problem.
You'll spend weeks debugging the robot before you realize the container is the issue. I've heard that story more times than I can count.
Where does this all go next? Let's leave listeners with one open question.
Here's what I'm watching. As smart containers with embedded sensors become cheaper, and they're getting cheaper, the sensor packages that used to cost $50 are now under $10. We're going to see pressure for a unified Industry 4.0 container spec. something that combines RFID identification, IoT sensor data, and robotic handling features into a single standard. The question is whether the industry can agree on one before fragmentation becomes permanent. VDA 5 FAVA is a step in that direction for robot communication, but the container side is still a patchwork.
The alternative is a world where every major manufacturer has its own smart container standard, and interoperability goes out the window.
Which would be a tragedy, because interoperability is the entire point. The magic of VDA 4500 is that a Eurobox made by one manufacturer works identically to a Eurobox made by another. The robot doesn't care whose logo is on the side. If we lose that, we lose the foundation that made lights-out automation possible in the first place.
The next frontier, I think, is autonomous container-to-container handoff. Robots passing containers directly to each other without a human or a fixed conveyor in between. That requires even tighter dimensional tolerances than we have today, plus communication protocols that let two robots from different vendors negotiate a handoff in real time.
VDA 5050 is the beginning of that. It defines a common interface for AGVs and AMRs to talk to a master control system. But peer-to-peer handoff, robot-to-robot, is a harder problem. You need sub-millimeter precision on the container geometry because both robots are moving and they have to align perfectly in motion. It's like two people passing a baton while running at full speed, except the baton weighs 500 kilos and costs more than your car.
If the container has a 1 millimeter warp, the handoff fails, and you've got broken plastic and spilled product on the warehouse floor.
The spec sheet isn't getting less important, it's getting more important. Every step toward more autonomy, more speed, more lights-out operation, it all depends on the container being exactly what the standard says it is.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
If you enjoyed this deep dive into the specs that make robots work, we've got an episode on the VDA 4500 origin story, the plastic box that conquered your garage. Find it at myweirdprompts.com.
Send us your weird prompts at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.